From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Black History Month starts today, and Georgia has a long line of African-American trailblazers to celebrate. Today, we're learning about a truly original Mouth of the South, James Alipat Patrick. Atlantans first heard the DJ in 1951 when he hit the airwaves on the city's first black-owned radio station, WERD.
Oh, yeah, it's about 4 minutes after 5 o'clock, and this is 1480 on your dial in Atlanta, Georgia. I tell you.
Pat died at age 95 in 2015, but filmmaker Tom Roach documented his life in Alipat. The music is recorded, and he's joining me via Skype from New Orleans. Hello, Tom.
Good morning, Virginia. You know, you do a serious and thoughtful show every day, and we're now going to throw all of that out the window for the next 15 minutes, aren't we?
It must have been so much fun to go through this tape. This man was a real character.
I sat in the edit studio and laughed and laughed and laughed and built this movie over the course of 7 or 8 years on weekends at a big post-production facility that was vacant Saturday and Sunday with all of this expensive gear sitting idle. And I thought, I'll just dive in and do this. And it was sort of self-centered of me to start working on a film of an 81-year-old guy and then spend 7 years to get it done. But he lived to see it, and it came in first place at the Atlanta Film Festival, to everyone's surprise.
Well, I can't wait to dig into it, and here to do that with us is Richie DeForest. He's a gatekeeper now at the WERD Museum in Atlanta, which is preserving the legacy of Alipat and other black artists who faced discrimination, especially during Jim Crow. And welcome, Richie.
Good morning. Good morning, Tom. Thank you.
Hey, Richie. Great to hear your
What's
voice.
Going
you know,
on?
I think
doing,
I just called you Richie instead of Reese.
Well, I answered to all of them because I know what you mean.
Yeah.
But it's Reese. Yes.
All right, Tom. To those who don't know or never heard of Alipat, who was he? Tell us a little bit about his background.
Well, he kind of played the fool on the air, but he was actually a pretty studious guy. He was the child of an architect in Montezuma, Georgia. And he enrolled in Morehouse in pre-med. And then one day, someone at this brand new station, which was called a Negro format station, heard Pat calling bingo somewhere and said, "You've got a great radio voice. Why don't you come down and try out?" And Pat really didn't want to do it. But on the other hand, he knew that he was at Morehouse taking medicine, medical training, and he really was more interested in chasing girls. And so he gave radio a try and left the Morehouse medical student grind behind. And the rest is broadcast history.
Well, let's hear a little bit of that. Here he is doing his thing on the air.
Just about to break a day. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. And feel your pillow. Yeah. And she ain't there no more.
Oh. Where your baby used to lay.
Hey, don't start me to cry, man.
You see, he jumped around stations for decades after his start in 1951. He did a TV show. He emceed many live shows. Why was that voice, like Alipat, so important at that time and place? What do you think, Reese?
Well, Alipat, everything lined up for him. The music, the environment, the personalities, the fact that WERD was the first black-owned radio station in North America. And it just seems, as I'm looking at it from a distant perspective, it just seems like everything was just lined up perfect, and he was the perfect personality for that particular time.
It was a beautiful age for black music, and first hitting the mainstream in America. But you, Tom, you're a young white disc jockey when you first heard Alipat. How'd you come to meet him?
Well, I would sit in traffic in Atlanta listening to his show, just crying with laughter. And not only was the music great, but then as a DJ, I also was into sort of the found art of dead air and records at the wrong speed and air conditioner hum and everything that goes along with a low-budget station. And one day, it was Christmas Day, and I was with a friend down in South Atlanta, and we'd had a little taste, as Alipat would say, and we thought, let's let's just get in the car and go over there and bang on the door and see what happens. And so we went down there because Pat was on the air complaining that it was Christmas and he had to work. And the door threw open and he said, you white boys ain't got nothing better to do than to come down here and F with me. And we thought, uh-oh, we're in trouble now. And then he changed to a big, broad smile and invited us in. And that's where we saw the madhouse that was his little studio with the VU meters pegging out and records, all over the place, and him just having a great, fun time. And that was just his environment. He worked all alone and created this fantastic soundscape every day. And eventually I got to know him a little better and decided to take the 30 hours of tapes I had acquired over the years. So again, I would have met him maybe in 89, and then around 2002, we signed a deal to make the movie. But when I say signed a deal, he said, "Where's my money?" And I said, "Well, there's not going to be any money." And at the end of the day, as successful as the film has been, I've never made a dime off of it.
Well, I can imagine for 7 years of work. But let's hear a little bit more of him, because that's really the point of being here. Atlantans may remember his freestyled ads. Here is one of many used in your film.
Ray's told you that they are good arrangers. They can make arrangements for any occasion. If it's death or a wedding, of course, a wedding and death are very synonymous. One is about as bad as the other. When you get married, you actually die, and when you die, you dead also. So
So that's for Flowers by the Vineyards. He did them for hair salons, restaurants, tire shops, clothing stores. And we're told in the film that business owners paid him, not the many stations he worked for. And these were not always glowing endorsements. Why did they keep coming back?
Oh, I just think that any publicity is good publicity. And in the film, we also feature the wonderful and heavenly H. Johnson.
Still on WABE.
Yes, he is.
Still on WABE. And he says that he was so influenced by Ali Pat that he went on the air and he tried to make fun of sponsors and promptly got in big trouble for it, just proving that there's a certain art to the insult. And H didn't have it, and you just don't do that on the radio. But Pat was the kind of guy, he drove around town in a big car with the windows always down so he could just shuck and jive with anybody out on the sidewalk, and everybody knew him and everybody expected that from him. And if he didn't insult them, people said, "Pat, are you feeling all right today?"
Well, Reese, were there other DJs like him on the air at that time? I mean, we certainly have our wild DJs, but what did he bring that was so distinctive?
There were definitely other DJs. I mean, there was... I'm trying to think of the DJ who had his show. You might know his name. His show was Purple Grotto. They called him Cuz Herb Lance. Mm-hmm. But no one had the comic instincts of the great Ali Pat. And I am just grateful to have met him on several occasions. On October 3rd of every year, which is when WERD went on the air, we have a party for WERD and Ali Pat, and Ali Pat attended a couple of those parties.
Mm-hmm. Did other DJs try to imitate his style?
I don't really have a great deal of information of anyone that might have tried to influence his style. I think Ali Pat was, had his own lane, his own planet.
Tom, did white people listen to WERD or follow his advice to shop on Auburn Avenue?
When I made the movie, I realized as a lister that pretty much everybody on the south side of Atlanta knew who he was, and very few people on the north side of the black-white divide, shall we say, knew, other than jazz freaks and blues freaks and crazy radio freaks. So when I started recording his shows, I did it just for my own. I was just frustrated this wonderful material was going out into the airwaves and was lost forever. So I started recording it and eventually acquired 30 hours of cassettes. And then they sat in a shoebox in my basement for a couple decades. And only later did I come and make a film. And that rambling answer did not. That
no, you did not answer my question. Thank you very much. But somebody in your film does say, this was a glimpse into a community that he knew nothing about. And of course, most of this is during segregation. So there wasn't a lot of sort of crossover of culture other than through music.
And so that that gets back into the fact of, for instance, when Pat would have Hosea Williams on for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, an hour and a half with no music, no station IDs, and they were just, you know, just shooting the breeze. It was a conversation I would not have heard otherwise, and I learned a lot from it. I learned a lot about culture. And this gets back to the importance of black radio, especially WERD in the 1950s, and the emergence of what they called Negro format radio. In the 40s, the radios were large. They had tubes. They stayed in the living room. In the 50s, the radios got smaller and moved up into the bedrooms. And the white audience could listen to black music and black culture that was at variance with what their racist parents might have been telling them. And they could hear the real Fats Domino and not the Pat Boone version, etc. And so this black radio afforded white listenership to dig deep into the culture and learn a lot and actually start to say discrimination is wrong. What are these people talking about?
That's Tom Roach. His documentary film about the legendary DJ Ali Pat won the Founders and Directors Award at the Atlanta Film Festival. Reese DeForest is also with us. He's in charge of a museum dedicated to Atlanta's black history, including WERD radio. Well, white audience aside, he played such an important role in African-American history. There are terrific bits in the film of a conversation between Pat and former civil rights leader and UN ambassador Andrew Young. And you spoke with him afterwards. Here he is talking about Pat in the film.
The thing that I think Pat became famous for, in fact, I think he was really a forerunner to Tom Joyner and all of these folk. Stuff they're doing now, you were doing
years ago.
Years ago. And he used to say, all right, now it's time to get up and get them pink curlers out of your head and get them out before you leave the house. Don't be standing up at the bus stop still taking out the curlers. And for God's sake, don't be driving down the road still trying to get them damn curlers out of your head.
What do you think, Reese? Was he the first shock jock?
Oh, I think so. Let me just share this with you. I learned that in 1967, Dr. Martin Luther King spoke to the Association of Radio and TV Broadcasters in terms of the significance that the DJ played in the breaking down of the walls of segregation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And this is a wonderful little story. WERD takes music to senior homes throughout the city.
Mm-hmm.
And this one senior home I went to, this little small white lady pulls me aside and she says, you know, when I was a teenager, I would take my transistor radio upstairs in the closet
there
in the
attic
and listen to WERD.
Uh-huh. Right? You're freed from the family console.
But, exactly.
But do you think, Reese, there was also a little bit of shock at hearing a black man on the air at a time not being polished or, you know, doing the code switching that often happened for a black man in a mass audience?
Well, I mean, during that era within the black community, that was not a big deal. It was probably... it was just natural conversation.
Mm-hmm. But unguarded conversation.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, he was, of course, a forerunner on the radio. But Andrew Young and Ali Pat also talked about Pat's role as the first black bail bondsman in Atlanta in the early 1960s. He was instrumental in the civil rights movement for getting activists, including Martin Luther King Jr., now Congressman John Lewis, Ralph Abernathy, many others out of jail. Now, here's Pat speaking on air about one of those runs.
Georgia Towns, and I was scared to death. And one of them crackers was going to shoot me for coming down there getting those quote-unquote out of jail. That's what they used to say.
Yeah, he tells a similar story at Hosea Williams' funeral, you know, about a sheriff with tobacco juice running down his both sides of his mouth. You know, he can't even read. Had anyone heard anything like this on the radio, Reese?
Not to my knowledge.
Yeah, how about you, Tom?
I don't know where to begin. When he spoke at Hosea's funeral, he talked about facing down those sheriffs, and he just would quietly tell the sheriff, well, he wouldn't tell the sheriff he was a black bail bondsman. He'd tell the sheriff, I work for a white man in Atlanta. And that just brought the house down at Ebenezer when Pat spoke at Hosea's funeral. You know, we really haven't mentioned that since the film is so full of fantastic music that would cost a fortune to license, I give it away for free.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it anytime if you just search Ali Pat Vimeo. Mm-hmm. There's a video service called Vimeo, V-I-M-E-O, Alipat Vimeo. And we could also put a link on your side.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that. Hey, you know, cut out with the promotional DJ stuff. Let's get back to the story here.
Yes, ma'am. I'll sit up straight.
Well, was there any retribution for Pat for his work in the civil rights movement?
What do you mean?
Well, you know, did he suffer? I mean, many people who were active in the civil rights movement were targeted. Was he, as a very public personality, talking about things like, you know, cracker sheriffs in South Georgia?
Oh, no, I don't think so at all. I think because his audience was exclusively African-American with just a few tiny percent white listeners, he was actually very brave because the civil rights workers would go to these small towns en masse during the day, and then Pat would come down to these small towns at night alone with a suitcase full of money to bail them out. So I think he had a lot of respect in the community for that level of bravery.
Mm-hmm. Tell me how he got his name, Alipat, quickly. We're up against a break.
His listeners said that, you know, his initial shows on WYZE sounded like blues from the alley.
Mm-hmm.
And so that morphed into Alipat.
Well, let's hear a little bit of the blues that he loved to give people a taste of as we head into a break. We are going to come right back in a minute with the maker, Tom Roche. He's the documentary filmmaker. He made the film about the legendary DJ Alipat, and also Reese DeForest, who's in charge of a museum dedicated to Atlanta's black history, including Negro-owned, as it was called, WERD Radio. We'll leave you with some Howlin' Wolf, of Alipat's favorites. We'll be back with more on Second Thought in just a minute. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott, and we're continuing our conversation about a pioneer of black radio on this first day of Black History Month, James Patrick, known as Alipat. Now, whether you lived in Atlanta forever or you're just pulling into town, he is one of the characters who have helped shape the character of Atlanta. Tom Roche is a longtime Atlantan who now lives in New Orleans, where he's joining us on Skype. And he worked with Pat and is the writer, editor, and producer of a documentary feature called Alipat. The music is recorded. Reese DeForest is with us. He's in charge of preserving the WERD studio. That's at the Madam C.J. Walker Museum, both of them here. Tom, I want to ask you about, there's a bit in your film when Alipat reflects on his relationship with the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Let's just hear this. This is with the night before he left for Memphis.
I was with him the night before he went to Memphis, which was on a Sunday night. They had a retreat for SCLC at the Regency Hotel downtown. And he was in his suite with his wife, and I was on the same floor. We were having a party. He came out of the suite to the party in his pajamas and his night robe. And he sat up there with us and drank scotch and soda.
What a poignant memory, considering, of course, what happened after that. What was his relationship like with the civil rights movement leaders like King and Lewis and Hosea Williams?
Well, oh, go ahead. Oh, was that Reese?
No, go ahead, Tom.
Okay. Well, you know, he had known Dr. King as just an ordinary Joe. Pat says he didn't give a damn about money. He didn't give a damn about publicity. He just was an ordinary guy. But at the same time, Pat knew that, at the time Dr. King passed away, Pat reflected that for Dr. King, there was no other way out. He knew this was going to happen someday. And Pat reflected that he was surprised that the assassination of King didn't happen sooner. Mm. So he was braced for that news. And it's interesting to hear you play back that piece about the night before. You know, as a film editor, you're always trying to truncate people's comments so they can make their point quickly and you can move on and fit more stories in. But an editor also needs to know when to just leave it alone. Mm-hmm. This is history. Pat talking about the last night of King's life. And as an editor, you just cue that up and you just let it play and you use every scrap of it.
Enrici, for you, you know about his history in radio. One of them was at WYZE, which was the gospel music station. And yet he didn't seem to have a lot of love for a lot of preachers, aside from Dr. King.
Well, I just think he was just telling it the way it was. I don't think there was any animosity there. It's just the reality of his experiences.
Right. Well, okay, so you mentioned before, Tom, the funeral of Hosea Williams. Andrew Young was there, Jesse Jackson, the cream of the civil rights era there, and Pat had everybody absolutely in stitches. You know, he's not the maker of speeches or an organizer, but brought them all down, brought down the house, really. Let's hear just a little bit of that.
When I got here, the operator called me and said, Mr. Patrick, will you please take all of these calls off of your mailbox? I said, I'm not supposed to have any calls. I said, but I'll see where they are. I picked up the phone and began to go through the mailbox, and all of his women was calling me to find out how he was.
So what did it mean to have that particular voice? You know, you're not talking about august ideas or pushing things forward, but that kind of sense of humor. What did that mean for the community? Reese, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, no, not really.
How about you, Tom? Do you want to follow up?
Well, if you've never seen the entire Hosea Williams funeral eulogy from Pat, it's an absolute must-see. And when that happened, I was just wrapping up the film, and it was a 60-minute film. And when that happened, I saw it, and I just said, my film just became an 85-minute film because we've just got to put all of this in and let it run. Again, leave it alone, truncate it maybe a little bit. But that just showed how Pat could get fired up, and the more the audience fired him up, he would just charge forward. And it's fascinating to have, as a filmmaker, sort of become friends with Andy Young and become friends with all these civil rights pioneers. And it's an odd burden when a white filmmaker takes on black history, especially with a lot of sensitive language. And you just have to make sure you get it right, do test screenings. And the end result is when I do screenings, the white viewers to a person come up and say, wow, what a wild ride that was. And the black viewers to a person come up to me and say, thank you.
Well, thank you for speaking with us about Ali Pat, Tom Roach. Appreciate you being here.
And I hope, again, you can check out Ali Pat Vimeo. Look it up. You can stream the film online for free.
Or you can come by the studio because we play it.
Oh, right there.
All
there you go.
History Month.
That would be a beautiful thing for somebody who's visiting Atlanta to see a great glimpse of Atlanta. Reese DeForest, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Information on where to find him and that studio and also the film at gbbnews.org.
Just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.